you know, comfortable people don't want change. Why should they change if everything is good? Then when you ask yourself the question, then who is uncomfortable in this world? I think it's women and younger people.
Welcome to Freewheeling, the free thinking podcast about moving forwards faster. My name's Thomas Abelman, and each week I'll bring you fresh voices, new ideas, and unconventional thinking. So let's get started now with this week's edition of the Freewheeling podcast. Persistence, passion, people, purpose, progress, planet. These words are written in vivid neon on a wall in the north of Istanbul. The wall is at the entrance to Fark Labs, and the founder of Fark Labs is Ahu Serta. She's an accomplished founder, an investor, and an activist for women's entrepreneurship and sustainability, with a focus on the transport and automotive sector. Fark Labs started out in Turkey, but is now global. Ahu Serta started out in Turkey, but is now global. Ahu Serta, welcome to the Freewheeling podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, Tom.
So these words, persistence, passion, people, purpose, progress, planet. The sense I get is that they're not just a statement of corporate values, which can often be quite bland. I get the sense they really come from you and from your heart personally. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are very right. And thank you for starting with that, because that's what everything starts with. You know, I was looking for the answer to the question, what does it take to be a good entrepreneur, or to have the mentality, you know, to search without getting tired and then trying to find that one thing that you need. And then, and at that time, the answer, and I did it with my team, actually, when we were forming Fark Labs, and we came up with five. So there were five P's initially. And one of them, I remember Progress, for example, came out that we were in an auto exhibition and we were watching the Volvo truck. So everybody was, you know, they were advertising this autonomous trucks, but they all had a driver cabin. The Volvo truck did not have a cabin. And that's when we said, wow, that is progress. That was the fifth P. And then later on, one of our colleagues said, well, I think I got it. She sent me a message at like 2 a.m. in the morning. I think planet should be one of our P's because everybody that is an entrepreneur needs to be concerned for the planet. I said, well, that's a great idea. So we will add it first thing on Monday. Monday, we had another sign on the wall, the sixth P.
So, which of those P's do you think, when you look at new entrepreneurs, which of those P's do you think is the one you're really checking for, that's the hardest, the least innate, the one you really need to try to learn, or the one that'll sabotage you if you haven't got?
Well, learn, I don't know, but the hardest to exercise is persistence. To stay persistent despite of all the things that happen to you on the journey of becoming a good entrepreneur or even an investor, you know, the others, you know, passion is a sexy, everybody wants to have passion, exercise passion. Persistence is the hardest, I think.
One of the fascinating things about persistence is the fact that it is also called stubbornness. And I think it seems to be stubbornness if you turned out to be wrong, and persistence if you turned out to be right. Have you ever found a way of distinguishing persistence from stubbornness yet?
I am actively searching, because everybody, yes, you should ask my husband. He may call it stubbornness. But I think, you know, that's where you use the EQ and the IQ together. It is also a very important place to know when to give up. Doesn't really mean you give up, but means that you are directing your efforts to activities that are going to get better returns to you. So it's realizing that moment and having the humility to realize it. Because giving up is just a part of the journey. So you may give up now, but then you will carry on. I think that's the parting line between being stupidly stubborn and intelligently persistent.
Now, there's so much of your story I want to talk about, but let's start with Fark Labs. What exactly is Fark Labs? I think you can probably assume that my, you know, pretty heavily, not exclusively, but pretty heavily British-based audience don't know anything about it. So start from first principles.
Yes, yes. Well, it is also, it's an ongoing answering session for me, because I wanted to build a company that is, and that company didn't need to have everything set up at the beginning. It is like a vehicle that you discover. It's like a discovery tool. One of my younger daughters, Aria, she was playing Minecraft a lot. And especially during pandemic, you know, you get to spend a lot of time with your kids. And then I was looking at the Minecraft, and then I was really mesmerized that she had friends from all around the world that she got along with very well. They all had different worlds, you know. Somebody, Sarah is building a world there, Arya is building a world there. And then at any time, they could co-join their worlds and create a bigger world. And that was really amazing to me. I said, why in the corporate world are we not able to do that? So, and that's how the idea of Spark Labs, let's build a company that is like Minecraft. And so anybody who's curious with six P's, it could be an investor, it could be a country, it could be a company, it could be an entrepreneur. Anybody can come around it and then try to find the next version of things, you know, like let's discover the future together. And the idea was this. And then, of course, how we exercise it is, so Spark Labs has two sides. One is the growth and finding the opportunity. So we first find smart people. And I would say it's rental share versus mental share. So mental share is so important, and that is the most valuable asset in the world. So where do we find smart people, smart concepts? Then we start growing them, invest in them, and then take them global to make stories, to make an impact. And the motto was better future together. So let's build a world. And we said that we're not going to invest into anything that is not good for the world. And so I was heavily in automotive. So I grew up in automotive. And then from there, where are things going? It's mobility, it's new materials, new energy, you know, space and all those things. And so it's like a vehicle that we created that anybody can use.
I love the level of ambition that you said to yourself, let's create a platform for creating the future. What on earth gave you the confidence that it was even possible?
Well, there's a gentleman that I really like to listen a lot, and he happens to be British. Peter Fiske, the writer of Game Changers, and he's also one of the founders of Thinkers50. So Peter was I first read his book, and then I'm like, wow, that's great. That he's exactly writing what I'm thinking about. That was maybe 10 years ago. And then I went to his program, and it's about how to change the future. It was a 1 month program. And during that, you know, of course, ambition needs to be there, because without ambition and without a moonshot, that's what he calls, you know, why are we even trying to build something if it's not going to take us to the moon? So that's where I get the ambition from, I think. And also he gave me the courage with all the examples that he has shown us. Well, once you want it, you have the intention, you have the motivation and the intellect to ask, to have the courage to ask why not.
And how many of the projects that you're nurturing within Spark Labs are crazy moonshots, and how many of them are incremental progress? You talked about the word progress earlier, because you do a lot on like new materials, for example, which is really exciting, but it's also making small steps in the building blocks to creating something bigger. How do you divide it between moonshots and incremental?
I call it, I'm coming from investment management. And, you know, the first thing they teach you when you're studying investment, it's building a smart portfolio. And innovation needs to be approached this way as well. So how do you build an innovation portfolio to the future with an investment portfolio approach? So an investment portfolio approach means what is my return tomorrow, but what is my return 10 years from now? And depending on how you want to, you know, leverage your future, your portfolio may change, and how much money you have the resources. It's not always money, by the way. Sometimes some corporates, for example, they have such credibility, big name, 50 years, you know, 100 years coming. So they have another power that they can exercise more than money in order to make change happen. So it's all realizing the value of those things you have today, and then where you want to go in the future, and how you build your portfolio. The way I do it is, when we are doing investments, I have an investment portfolio that is more than 70 companies. There are very small companies that we put in 50K just to see what they're going to do, and then we will follow them up on the other rounds. But then we have seed, we have Series A, and we have also strategic investments up to even 25 to 30%, meaning that these are the investments that are going to do the returns in the next 5 years. Because increasingly, especially if you're, I'm working on the more in the industrial sector, you know, automotive, and these things take time. But historically, what would take an automotive company, if it took them, for example, 50 years to get somewhere, to be an important player, now with the help of technology and the mental share, these companies can get there in 5 to 10 years. Even less sometimes. I'm very proud to say, by the way, I'm an investor in a British startup that just received the highest round of funding in the history of UK. So Wave, for example.
I have been in a Wave car. I've done a tour of Islington. The thing that impressed me most about Wave, so for listeners that don't know Wave, they are a autonomous vehicle company who are taking a very different approach. If you look at Waymo, tell me if I get this right, Ahu, you know, someone like Waymo mm-hmm. says, we're going to put autonomous vehicles onto the streets of Phoenix, Arizona, a really mm-hmm. big, wide, pedestrian-free environment, you know, really easy for self-driving vehicles. And Wave say, screw that, we are going to go into Islington. We're going to take the hardest urban environment on earth to try to make this working, because if we can make it work there, we can make it work anywhere, which is amazing.
Exactly. Well said.
But it wasn't the car that impressed me, actually, on my trip on a Wave vehicle. It was the safety driver, because the guy was a ninja, because this car would do a great job until it didn't. And honestly, it was incredible, because you'd be going around this incredibly tight bend in a low traffic neighborhood with bollards that were restricting the width of the road. And the car would be going around completely autonomously until suddenly at the last minute, it was clear that it was not going to make it around without clipping that bollard. And the guy would be grabbing the steering wheel only at the very last minute. It was a combination of technological innovation and sheer human dexterity, I tell you.
Also, for me, what was very impressive, yes, business models differ and there are differences in the similar startups. But for me, the most important thing was the founder, actually. And this guy is the best in his class for the AI, much before then people started talking AI so heavily in their lives. And then he was the best in his class in the whole world. And I said, it's the person that I need to put my money in more than the business model. And
I agree.
So it's different in the portfolio approach. Sometimes it's the person itself. Sometimes it's the business, depending on how it is.
Now, I think Wave are a really interesting company. I've always thought that in terms of the AI approach they're bringing, they are one of the ones that have got the most chance of success if anyone is going to make this work. So tell me, in terms of Fark Labs, what's the story so far? Well, you started with this idea of creating the future, like your daughter was creating Minecraft, and that was happening in lockdown. It wasn't that long ago. What's the story since then?
Well, you know what? As you said at the beginning, I'm born and raised in Turkey, but I am a global citizen. I got a great education in my country, who enabled me to speak many languages, you know, to travel later on. And being in the automotive, in the commercial vehicles, in the passenger vehicles, you know, I had the opportunity to travel throughout the world, visiting mostly factories, Mexico, India, Iran, so many different places. And it really made me realize that, of course, everybody works for a better future, but the idea of a better future of a Mexican person or a Turkish person is not the same as a person in Norway or in the United States. We all need a better future, but some of us, you know, need something different. And these people in these countries, they have the best entrepreneurial spirit, because they have the ability and persist in very difficult environments. They are still happy and want more. So these are great entrepreneurial qualities. And the idea came, okay, and this is a great asset to start with and to invest in. So if I find the right opportunities in these markets like Turkey, like Mexico, like, I don't know, Vietnam, invest and help them grow and help them become global stories, that is something really worth working for. And then provided that they are all working in the better future technologies. So on both sides, you are working the sustainability angle, the impact angle, the money angle, and then you are helping people in much better need of improvement so that they can get that money and come back and spend for the good of their own countries. And to be able to do it at scale, obviously every business person in these countries, they want to do that also in other countries as well. But let's say a classical businessman, my father, he's self-made. He made a great company from scratch that I took over. It's great. How many can one person do? One or two, maybe if he's lucky, or three. But with this model, with Minecraft, you can do hundreds and thousands. You are just teaching them the method of collaborative intelligence and, you know, how the game is played. And these are excellent, amazing people with the talent of learning very fast. So if you show them the way, they follow. And that's been the game. And I'm trying to find these kind of people and companies, help them, grow them, and bring them where they want to go.
I remember the first time we met, you telling me that you thought successful companies of the future would emerge from the kinds of countries you're describing, because unlike in America, where the vast majority of venture investment funding goes, there isn't as much money, and therefore there isn't as much money to waste, and that actually companies from these countries mm-hmm. are naturally efficient and know how to spend their money well in a way that perhaps American venture businesses don't. Is that still your view?
Yes, and I'm exercising it every day. I just invested in a company. They are doing battery pack design and manufacturing for commercial vehicles and marine. So this company have a number of homologated products that are ready to use to any application. And they have only used 10 million euro to be able to do that. They already built two factories, one in Germany, one in Turkey. They have more than 10 products that has been homologized, and they can use it in Europe and in the States. Now we're taking them to the States. Their competitor, on the other hand, who has just went bankrupt, actually, after $1 billion of funding. And at the end, they didn't even have a working product. So sometimes when you start believing that it's you only need money to make greater things, you lose that it factor, kind of. And in these developing countries where there is the talent for technology, but there is also the talent to bootstrap. And yes, money is, of course, needed. And that is why we are also trying to take them global, because customers are there. But at the beginning, when you're starting things, I think it's very important to find these kind of companies. So my view hasn't changed, and I continue to invest in these cases.
10 million euros, two factories, 10 products. That's absolutely mm-hmm. extraordinary. That's yeah. amazing. Yeah. What yeah. are the characteristics of the leadership teams that are able to get so much done with so little, at pace, without waste? Now you've seen... You've got so many bits of the Minecraft board assembled now. Are there common characteristics of those leadership teams and the way they behave and the way they lead that you start to see? Mm.
Always. I mean, the six P's, for sure, that must be given. But most of the time, like if it's an engineering product that I'm investing in, I want to make sure that I'm investing in the best engineers of that country or even in the world for that product. So that when I'm investing into something in the States, for example, I already have a team that can evaluate, an experienced team that can value all the assumptions towards that investment. So best in class, that's very important in the domain that they're in. I think it also is great if they are a team of two or three doing different things. I really value the importance of a good CTO, a visionary CEO who's talented in business development and sales. Also, when you're doing what we are doing in the technology, you know, and you go to a customer in the automotive or in the marine, you have to know what you're talking about. You cannot just be a marketing person. So it's important to have that technical background. So I like the teams that are two or more, and they get along well, and they have a division of tasks. And the passion and the hunger, of course, to be, because they are angry. You know, the $1 billion guy, he gets the $1 billion. This guy cannot even get $1 or $2 million that he needs to make greater products. And they want to show the world how it's done. And I like that anger turning into motivation. It is great motivation. And I like to be there with them, with those teams.
Bain did a study on founders' mentality and the companies that have that founders' mentality and go on to succeed. And the word they always use is insurgency. The companies that have this sense of being an insurgent are those that go on to do best.
Yeah, yes.
Now, you focus a lot on automotive, and you've got this perspective as an investor, which is a really interesting and useful perspective because you're always looking at the future, whereas so many people in any sector are looking at the present. I was at the FT Future of the Car Summit this year, and you didn't get the sense, I felt, of an industry at the cusp of absolute revolutionary transformation. And yet if we're not at the cusp of revolutionary transformation, we're not going to achieve your sixth P of planet. What's your sense of where the automotive industry is right now?
Actually, that I started asking this question also a while ago. And actually, my question was more like, as a supplier, you know, we were on the supplying side. And it was, who's going to be our customers 20 years from now? And as a supplier, you know, suppliers always think that their customers will be OEMs. If you're tier one, if you're tier two, they think tier one is their customer. It's actually with mobility, people realize that the actual customer is the moving people themselves. You know, it's the people we serve. It's not about owning a car. It's about using the mode of transportation, the moving that you choose. And so now cars have much more competition than just electrical cars. There are electrical bikes. You know, there will be other modes of transportation to move from one place to another. So competition is much more multidimensional now than before. And that's why it is quite complex to find. And that's why you need engines like Farc Labs searching different things. What's going on in micromobility? What's going on in the materials, in the EV, in the battery? Because just doing one thing only and focusing, like before we were taught to do, that's not enough. You need to be looking at many things and then catch the things that are going to do well maybe 1 year from now. But then you also need to be looking at things that are going to do well 5 years from now. So at the same time, there needs to be solar and hydrogen and the battery and then plastic, but also the bio-based materials. I don't know. It's very complex. And I like that because once you learn to play that game, you get the competitive advantage. And then the others really are having a hard time catching up. And it's not a game of resources anymore. It's a game of mental agility. And if you have that, the barrier is removed. That comes with the capital. So in the automotive sector, I think a lot of things are going to change. A lot of the OEMs are going to become the Nokias of the past. I don't know which ones. I have some guesses. But it's also not only about electrical cars. It's about the way things change, about the way people move, freedom to move. It's a discovery. We live in the excited.
I agree with you about some of the big automotive manufacturers becoming the Nokias of the future, the Nokias of the past. It just you talked about the need for mental agility, and yeah, you can see that in, you know, Farc Labs and in many of your companies that you're nurturing, and in many other parts of the sector. But yeah, some of the automotive sector, you don't see that sense of mental agility. You've got an ecosystem that looks like it did 100 years ago and is optimized for repetition, which is very different to being optimized for innovation and change. Do you have a sense as to where the mobility landscape will be in 10, 20, 30 years' time?
Going back to the automotive, how it is, you know, for years we were trained to have that 1% improvement. Let's say you have a 1% improvement in your assembly line, and then you will be the happiest. Everybody will get rewards and everything. And it's like you fix one problem, and then you repeat that solution over and over again, like you said. But this is really a curse when the rest of the world, the technology people, are already starting to work. How can I make a 1,000x change, you know, where you are only used to working on that 1%. So That mental agility, that's what I mean. And then that needs to change. And how can this change? First of all, younger people need to come into the game. The way automotive or any kind of traditional industries are managed is, you know, you start working and then after 30 years, you get somewhere, you're on the top of the organization, but you're already too old to understand the changes and to make the necessary moves. This time lapses need to be much shorter and much more younger and diversified, let's say. So there needs to be more women in the game as well. It doesn't only need to be white and all that, you know, because it's about collaborative intelligence. And without that, multiple X is not possible. So, and where would the mobility go? Honest to say, it's going so fast that where I think it would go in 2 years, you ask me 3 months from now, it changes. And I think it's more about not where we will end up, but it's how or our ability to cope with that speed of change. The more we are not surprised what's going to happen and the change, I think we become better players.
Do you have a perspective on the types of organization that is going to be able to cope with the speed of change? What do they look like?
It's like putting the 6P in within 2 days. Okay, let's decide and add the 6P. I don't need to get the permission of, you know, 70 board members and 20 managers, and let's discuss that for weeks type of thing. Discussions are very good, but they need to be used for the sake of making big leaps. The thing that we're going to do is not going to, you know, and the big leaps can only be done with bold moves. So leadership becomes very important. I think we need very confident, very risk-taking leaders. Of course, the capitalism doesn't really favor, I mean, risk takers are favored, but until you make a mistake. And so if you are somebody who's afraid to make mistakes, you cannot do these changes. So the definition of leadership needs to change as well, because if you want to have a piece of the future, a better future, you need to also behave differently. I don't like the corporate structures that much I don't think they are the right models to bring us to that future. I think we need smaller, very agile teams. Smaller companies who can grow much faster than their competitors.
The thing about leadership and willingness to make mistakes and it being okay to make mistakes is so key for inventing the future.
Yeah.
Have you seen any examples of that style of leadership, a leadership that does value risk and value the learning from mistakes that is outside the startup sector? Because startups do this all the time and venture capitalists invest on the basis that some things will fail. Have you seen that anywhere else in scale businesses, in legacy businesses?
I think I see it more in China than anywhere else. When you look at some models, a friend of mine, actually she wrote a book about why it's not too late to learn from China. And she meant it in that innovation way. Of course, until that point, it was about imitating. Then it became imitating very fast. And then you make your changes and then you go in front of everybody. In China now, there are more than 10 EV brands that are above a certain scale. And that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. So that I call a transformative innovation. And I was also reading some books about HIRE methodology. It's a white goods company, you know, and it treats all their business units like an entrepreneurial group, gives them the money, and they're not more than 100 people. They cannot grow more than 100 people, these divisions, and they can decide what they want to do on their own. It's great. It's a great model of having a big company. So it's you have the admiral ships, but then you have these small ships around you that can steer you much faster. I don't know these companies from inside out. I only know what I read. And when I like what I read, I try to bring it to my own mentality and exercise it. There are a lot of people who read and who talk about it, but then the next day they come to work and they just do things as business as usual. When I read something and I like it, I come next morning and I apply it. If it doesn't work, we take it back. But at least we have tried something new. And I like that. Keeps things fun and alive.
Fantastic. In a minute, I'm going to ask you about your work for women, but first, a quick break. The reason for the break is so I can tell you, my listeners, a bit about freewheeling the business as opposed to freewheeling the podcast. In a world in which startups are getting faster, but established firms are getting slower, I help organizations that want to get things done faster. If this sounds like something you're interested in, visit www.freewheeling.info. So, Ahu Serta, you're in venture capital, you're in automotive, you're in Turkish business, three environments that I think most people would characterize as being particularly challenging for women. And you've not broken one glass ceiling, you've kind of scattered glass all over the place and raking all of them simultaneously. Is that how it feels to you?
No, it feels normal. That's what we all need to do.
Yeah.
You founded Aria, the women investment platform, which brings together successful investors to invest with a focus on gender balance. How's that going? And is that a part of your mission as well? Because it's not part of the Farklab mission. It's not one of the six P's. But is that one of your personal missions?
Oh, it is actually a part of the bigger plan for the better future together. Because without women, world cannot have a better future. You know, half of world's population can be comprised of women. And then our leader, Atatürk, has a word that, let's say the object becomes from two parts. You push one part forward and the other part remains lagging. It's physically, it's not possible to press. So that's actually, that word also got to me, that physically, how can the world move towards a better future? So women were, and who would want change? You know, comfortable people don't want change. Why should they change if everything is good? Then when you ask yourself the question, then who is uncomfortable in this world? I think it's women and younger people. You know, they want change because they are not listened enough. They are not valued enough. So, and that makes them a great asset. Whichever investor who thinks about it first, does something about it and invests in these asset classes, they're going to become the best investors of the world. And as from an investor's mindset, I am a woman. I know my kind. I know how good women are and also overlooked. So I wanted to start there. And that's how I built a platform, because money has no gender. But women don't know that. Men don't know that. Men are much more pragmatic. When they see women making money, they would gladly welcome every one of them. And that's my mission in Aria, how women can be more aware of their wealth. How can they learn about investing? We built the first angel investing platform in Turkey. Also the first gender lens investing fund that is now going over $20 million that is investing in businesses with at least one female co-founder. So that's going very well too. But, you know, everything started when I was watching Game of Thrones. As you see now, I like stories. And I saw this little Arya in the first episodes. And then I was thinking to myself, you know, how come these women, actually all women are born this way. They believe in themselves. They are small, but they are very strong. And then time goes by and they become weak. World makes them, you know, turns them into weaker people. And what if, that's why I also named the organization Aria. And I said, I had two daughters at that time. And I said, if I have another daughter, I'm going to call her Aria. And I want to leave a legacy to my daughters and teaching them how to fight together so that they don't fall behind. And that's how Aria started. And when I started, you know, I had a lot of criticism, especially from my successful friends. Some male friends said, well, you are, you know, so focused and then you are so successful. Why do you need these women thing? And so they also saw it as something that's never going to be successful. But now we have also a lot of male members. A lot of corporations are investing with us. They learn about femtech, female technologies, how the world's most of the world's products are not geared towards women, and they need a specialty, and there is a big business there too. So I'm just trying to do my part, and I hope it is inspiring for other women and in other areas of the world, that they can just take this model and they can apply it to themselves.
I've got to ask the question, have you had the daughter that you've also called Aria? Because I'm slightly worried about you owning a venture fund and a daughter, you know, own a daughter, having a daughter of the same name. I feel that could cause all kinds of confusion around the house.
Of course I had the daughter, and her name is Aria. She's now 12. And she says she wants to take over my Aria and Farclabs businesses. And I tell her, smart girl.
Fantastic. In future, Aria will run Aria.
Hopefully.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. You're not trying to do what you're trying to do in Copenhagen and in publishing, you know, places that have got gender equality reasonably sorted comparatively, or in a sector where gender equality is pretty much normal. You're trying to do this in venture. You're trying to do this in automotive. You're trying to do this in places that haven't reached the levels of, you know, the far north of Europe yet. You mentioned you had some pushback from some male friends of yours. I mean, this must be a real battle. I was talking to someone who's on the current intake of Y Combinator, and for listeners who don't know, Y Combinator is probably the most influential accelerator program in America. It's an accelerator for startups. Very, very well known. Sam Altman, who's the founder of OpenAI, used to run it. The guy who was on this year's intake told me that 95% of this year's intake are men. It is an extraordinarily gender imbalanced sector. All of the sectors you're working in are extraordinarily gender imbalanced. Does it feel like standing at the foot of an enormous mountain and seeing the summit so far away?
It does, and it did all the time in my life. You know, I worked on Wall Street. I did my MBA in New York. Everywhere I sat, I was alone. And one is a very lonely number. So it's not a Turkish problem. It's not a Norwegian problem, but it's an overall problem. But you're right that the most that I felt that this gender equality issue was solved was in Scandinavia. All the rest of the world, be it in the States or in Germany or somewhere else, the problem still persists in different shape and form. So, but from financial, of course, I want to do good and I want to do impact, but I'm an investor. And then as an investor, you invest in the places where there is the maximum arbitrage. So to your answer, why did I choose to do that in Turkey? Because if I succeed in Turkey, the returns will be much higher than succeeding in Copenhagen. Because in Denmark, they needed less. In Turkey, they needed more. In Turkey, it is hard to achieve, but if you do achieve it, you will have a much better return. You will have an impact on many, many lives. And then they can in return come back and create that impact. So, and it's a financial, like an investment thesis, I would say. You know, some people like to be early investors. They take more risks. And some people like to come in the middle of the game. Okay, they sacrifice a little from their returns, but they don't take as much. So I think I'm a more pre-seed and seed type of girl. And I like that. I like finding the opportunities when it's early, but also with my own skill set, try to help grow that opportunity. Yeah, I think that's why.
It's a bit like the same approach as Wave take to autonomous vehicles. If you can make it work in Islington, you can make it work anywhere. If you can make gender equality work in Turkey /automotive/venture, you can make it work anywhere.
Yes.
I saw a statistic recently that showed the number one predictor of whether you're likely to vote for Donald Trump is your attitude to female equality, and it wasn't a positive correlation. Do you fear, America is a highly influential country, that we're seeing a backlash to trying to solve this problem before the problem is even solved? And if so, what do we do about it?
I think a lot of politics is turning around women, where women themselves are not in the driver's seats anywhere in the world, not only in the States. I don't like that as a woman. That's why I think more women should be on the driving seats to not enable it anymore. it's really not fair to the rest of the world, a bunch of men talking about their political decisions and trying to influence the other's political decisions based on the other sex, but the other sex doesn't think with them. I don't enjoy it. I'm not a political person, so I don't have a lot of deep things to say. I can only comment as a woman. That is why I'm always working. Unless you have the power to sit at the table, you will never be invited for free. And that's where I want to stay, and then to help people, to help women gain more power to sit at every chair of the table. So in the political table, in the financial tables, in the other tables. Otherwise, there will be many Trumps talking about us and using women as a tool. And the world, the audience seem to like it very much. So I think we need to change the channel.
That is a very motivational message. Is there anything that you want my listeners to be doing if they're listening to you? What's your message for them?
I think what's missing in the world that we listen to each other so little. You know, the countries that exist in the world, we see them, oh, it's a place, it's a nice vacation place. But then I have nothing to do with it. And then we just, you know, shut the channel off. And the more we start hearing from each other, I think the Minecraft mentality is going to spread even more. And then the conflicts that exist in the world is going to ease off if we were to spend more time in learning about each other. And I don't know anybody who doesn't appreciate a hardworking person anywhere in the world. You know, it could have women and mobility is not only about transportation. Mobility to me is freedom to move, and freedom to move is not only transportation. Also, it comprises immigration, the problems that cause immigration, and you know, all the problems that the world has now. And then we need to think about how we can create that displacement problem into an exchange solution. So can we find the opportunities in this displaced world rather than trying to blame each other or finding guilt in the displaced? So there are so many things to think and to talk about. I hope your listeners would have some time to reflect on these, and then how coming together would make our lives much better, and also our children's, of course. And then the world can get much better ideas from this kind of exchange and the Minecraft mentality.
I'm going to remember the phrase, the Minecraft mentality. That's what we're going to take out from this recording. I love it. We're all individually building bits of the world together, and then we stitch it together into something that's so much better as a result of all our common endeavours. Ahuserta, the Minecraft mentality, thank you so much for joining me on the Freewheeling Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes this week's edition of the Freewheeling Podcast. Thank you very much indeed to you for listening. Do join me next week for another edition, and in the meantime, have a wonderful week. If you'd like to find out more on moving forward faster, then visit www.freewheeling.info/blog, and you can find more content there on transport, mobility, and organisations and case studies that have found ways of getting things done more quickly. If you're interested in learning more about freewheeling the business and how we can help you move forward faster, then visit the main website on www.freewheeling.info. See you next week. Goodbye.